All right, welcome to Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, book clubs aren't just for women, and beer makes everything better.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
We're the Drunk Guys.
We're the Drunk Guys.
This week we're talking about John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. So Of Mice and Men tells the story of George and Lenny, two itinerant farmhands during the Great Depression who are traveling in California looking for work. George is a small, sharp, fast-talking head of the operation. Lenny is mentally challenged, yet very big and strong partner who gets them into trouble occasionally because of his lack of understanding of the world and how people behave. And our story picks up with them getting at a farm of a character really only known as the boss.
Yeah.
Where they will work as farmhands, and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, except not hilarity, because it's really, really sad.
It's very bleak. But before we get into that, let's crack open a beer. So this is the beer I brought this week for this book. It is from Founders Brewing Company, which is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It is called Harvest Ale.
Perfect.
It is a wet hopped ale coming in at like 7.6% alcohol.
Fairly strong.
70 IBUs. Looks like a kind of golden color. It says, this liquid dream pours a hazy golden straw color with a white two-finger head. Your first sip rewards you with a super juicy hop presence, bursting with fresh citrus, then finishing to introduce toasted malt undertones. Well, cheers.
Cheers. Don't forget to drink along at home.
Yeah, this one is in season right now. This was bottled. Actually, no, this is quite old, actually, this bottle. I've been had. This is from a few months ago.
Oh.
Quite frankly, I don't see why they couldn't just slap IPA on the label, but maybe that's because there are so many IPAs on the shelves. You kind of have to stand out. You can only have so many double or triple or quadruple IPAs out there. It tastes kind of IPA, so I do get the malt. There's a little more malt on the finish. It's really nice. Really nice beer. The story is, as Nate said, not funny at all. It is a bummer. I mean, there are some, I guess, moments of levity, but it is short, dense, depressing ride.
As I reread it for this podcast just this week, now knowing everything that happens, it was just so sad. All the foreshadowing and things like that. Like, oh my God. Oh yeah, then that happens. Oh no. It's really, really sad.
Yeah, there is a lot of foreshadowing, a lot of, you know, especially as you reread it and make your English teachers proud, you see these little things in the book like, oh, why did they leave weed? Because Lenny grabbed the woman's skirt and wouldn't let go. Well, oh, that created a problem for them then. Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to have problems with women later on, with the only female character in the book, actually.
Yeah. And many other examples just like that.
So let's talk about Lenny. In the book, I don't know if they ever really explain, but Lenny is mentally retarded. I mean, that is what he is. In 1930s terms, maybe they would have had some less polite term, like imbecile or something. But he's an enormous, strong, ultimately kind, but mentally simple character. He helps carry them, not physically, but in terms of their workload. George stresses that Lenny, don't say anything when we meet the new boss. Just let him see how you work, and then we'll be okay. Because he's so big and strong, like he fills the doorway, impossibly strong. And that is going to help them find work. But because Lenny cannot speak to people like an adult, and people
are, I mean, he can speak, but he's so simple. I mean, really, a part of my slight issue is that he's portrayed as such a simple person. He just doesn't understand what's going on. And so George tells him, don't speak because you're going to say something stupid. But he can't speak.
But you know what? There might be, you know, there's no direct evidence in the book, but we know that they're migrants.
Yeah.
So now George is pretty good at kind of cajoling his way into whatever he needs to do and making friends with people. And the fact that they have to keep moving is probably because of instances with Lenny.
Yeah.
Where the one we know in the book is about grabbing the woman's skirt. But
that's not the last town.
Right.
Constantly through the book, George is telling Lenny, now don't talk about this. Don't mention this. And every single time he just goes and mentions it. So, you know, the way he's portrayed is just the word simple. He's just simple in everything. All he really cares about is having something furry to pet. But he's so simple that he doesn't understand his own strength that he keeps killing them. First there's a mouse, That's the very beginning. Like, oh, look, you have that mouse there. Oh, wait, it's dead because you killed it by accident. Now, mice are kind of fragile. And then he is so excited when he gets a puppy when he's on the farm. A one-day-old puppy, which he doesn't, you know, leave it with its mother. He wants to play with it, and what? He kills it because he's so, because he pets it too hard or something like that. It doesn't really say. And then he ends up killing Curly's wife out of panic, but he also, because he didn't know his own strength, and he's too simple to really understand that.
Yeah, he just throttles her and shakes her to death. Now, that's not beyond the realm of possibility, but it is a bit extreme. I see your point about Steinbeck is depicting this guy as so simple, he doesn't understand that he's going to kill things from just touching them too hard, and he doesn't learn the lesson. He does it over and over again, and I'm pretty sure in the beginning when he kills the mouse, there's some comment that this isn't the first time that's happened.
Yeah.
So he doesn't learn from this. He doesn't mean to hurt things, but he cannot but help to do it. And that might be a little troubling for the depiction of the mentally unwell and mentally handicapped.
Now, when this was written, or when this was published in 1937, the idea of being politically correct that wasn't even a concept. Books and movies and what we would consider incredibly offensive today were just commonplace. We won't even say all the words that were commonplace to say back then.
No.
But so at the time, nobody was thinking this is too, we shouldn't portray people like this. But today, there's a little bit of that.
I think today people would try to at least be more realistic in their depiction, but it is, everything in the book is simplified. It is a short book. I'd say it's a borderline fable in its scope. So nuance is lost. But at this time, people were still classified on the census until like 1910 or 1920 as idiots and morons, and meaning certain levels of IQ.
That was a technical term for people at the time.
He's technically a moron, as opposed to now where people are just figuratively morons. Also, people were called mouth breathers. Like, that was a designation that schools would use. Like, oh, this kid's a mouth breather.
Oh my god.
So, like, literally, that's a thing.
That kid's a mouth breather.
I'm telling you, my wife's company a few years ago did this sort of public service thing, community service project, where they were cleaning out this place that had extremely old school records. Now, these were only records from the 50s, but kids were, like, their form said mouth breather on it. Like a box you check off. Not like some vindictive teacher wrote, I hate Jonathan L. He's a mouth breather. No, just mouth breather. Is it non-mouth breather or mouth breather? Just let me check off mouth breather for that kid. So we're 20 years before that. So in Steinbeck's terms, he might have been practically charitable in his depiction of Lenny.
Maybe. Because he's certainly worthy of pity. He's certainly not shown as being a villain.
No,
or malicious of any kind.
I mean, he's the co-lead of the story. I mean, he might be the tragic hero of the story in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly flawed. So is it wrong how he's depicted? By our standards, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're literally 80 years after the book came out right now.
Mm-hmm.
Times they are a change, and people will be offended by things in the book. I don't know if it's fair to get that offended by it, though.
I still think it's worth reading.
Absolutely.
Still worth reading.
You know, if you're upset by it, I think it's okay, but that doesn't mean that there's something necessarily wrong with the book.
Or that you shouldn't read it.
Yeah. We'll talk about a little later why you should or should not read the book. But I think Lenny's depiction, kind of fucked up, but as a product of its time, which we've talked about in other books now, well,
it was fine.
Yeah, it was totally fine, which is, you know, that says more about the time, the zeitgeist. With the milieu, then it says about...
You love that word.
I do love that word. Mm-hmm. Then it says about Steinbeck, or whatever. So the other character we could talk about, well, the other main character, is George. Now, George is, in many ways, the total opposite of Lenny. He's shrewd. I mean, he's not unkind. He takes care of Lenny. He is Lenny's caretaker. But he is small and sharp-witted, and he gets accused, sort of, by the boss of taking advantage of Lenny. Right, like he's using the big guy for his own benefit. The boss, of course, doesn't understand. That's because Lenny is unable to do it himself, and George is acting as his kindness or their friendship to take care of him. But is George really a good friend?
Well, okay. So first, that's a really difficult question to answer, or that is a complicated question to answer. Which actually, first, I just want to say they do have a in the book. I don't think they're brothers. They're not brothers, but they might be cousins. It's not really clear. There's like, oh, aunt whatever used to take care of you and she died and that's why I take care of you. But then again, aunt mightn't have been his actual aunt. It might have been just a, you know, a term for someone. So they might not be related at all, but they seem to be close. Or they seem to, this situation has been around for quite a number of years.
And they are poor during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So they rely on each other to survive. Each kind of does his what he can contribute in the partnership. And George is the brains of the operation, so he is taking care of him. So in that sense, yeah, he's a great friend.
Mm-hmm.
He is the one making sure that Lenny has a roof over his head and food.
Yeah, Lenny, I mean, yeah, Lenny could not take care of himself. Like, no. I mean, it's not totally clear in the book, but it appears to me that Lenny could not take care of himself. He would have nothing. He would have nowhere to go at all. Because after his aunt died, he has literally no one to take care of him except George, and George is taking care of him. So that's a really good friend. And we'll talk about what happens at the end and whether that's a good friend or not as well.
I think that's key to the, is he a good friend or not?
There's one other thing before we talk about the end. So even though George is taking care of Lenny, you know, which is very kind of him, he's also really mean because he keeps saying, boy, if I didn't have you here, if I didn't have to take care of you, I could have everything my own way. You know, I could have that girl. I could, you know, have my own little place. He keeps saying in the most really manipulative and demeaning way, if you weren't here, I mean, sure, it's probably pretty frustrating to have to take care of somebody like Lenny, but he's so mean about it. It's like, make a decision. Either take care of him or don't, but don't make someone feel so guilty for something they can't help. That's the part that made me really angry.
He does lord it over him
throughout
the book. But you know what? Does Lenny actually even understand it?
Right? Does Lenny feel bad about it?
Because George turns right around and starts talking to him about the plan, their farm they're going to have. George does try to have it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't right.
I think Lenny did understand that he doesn't get it and that he can't take care of himself. Even though he says, I'm going to leave. I can just go find a cave somewhere. I think on some level he knows, you know, that he's really, that there's something wrong with him. He does know that there's something wrong with him and that he makes him feel really bad when George says that stuff about him.
That's true. And Lenny never returns with anything personally mean to George. Right? He never reminds George that, like, hey, if I wanted to crush you, I could.
No.
He's kind. George is maybe fed up and stressed, but he's also not the kindest person in general. Mm-hmm. So that is fucked up. That's true. That is a black mark on his friendship.
Yeah.
Grade. Not the worst one, though.
Nope. All right, so we got to tell you what happens at the end, and then we'll talk about what that means. So during the book, they're on this farm. They go to a farm, and there's two farmhands. It's literally their first day, or maybe it's their second day. No, I think it's their first day on the farm, and there are all these other characters. And at the end, well, okay, so
I think there are Lenny,
maybe there are a couple days.
Because you have the puppy thing, and then George gets comfortable and goes out. Like the whole reason.
And they shoot the other dog,
which is
foreshadowing.
Yes.
So anyway, Lenny accidentally kills Curly's wife.
Now, Curly is the boss's son,
mm-hmm.
and Curly is a right cocksucker.
Yep.
He is awful. He is a little man. He's got like a Napoleon complex, mm-hmm. and he immediately takes to bullying Lenny because Lenny is a giant, and Lenny is so physically strong. He has this physical power, but Curly has the actual power of, I'm the boss's son.
Yeah.
I can get you guys fired. You guys are bums. You could be out of here in a second if I snap my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And he is cruel to Lenny, and Lenny doesn't fight back. Lenny, probably because this is not a new experience for Lenny.
Yeah.
And Lenny probably to some degree knows to not hit other people because I would imagine at some point in his life he did and really hurt somebody, and nobody's going to take the side of the giant person who hurt the little guy.
So Lenny's by himself in the barn, and Curly's wife, and there's a whole issue with Curly's wife, which we won't get into right this second, but Curly's wife comes to see him, and then she's like talking to him, and then she freaks out. Why does she freak out again?
Well, she talks about her, she wanted to be an actress or something, mm-hmm. and that her dreams are crushed, and it comes out, like, I think Lenny kind of tells her about their dream, right? He talks about the farm or something, and the rabbits. And she says, you could touch my hair, because he likes to just pet soft things. And you could touch my hair if you'd like. And he's thrilled to have a pretty lady nice to him and something soft to touch. Again, going back to, you know, like a little oversimplified character of Lenny, that he's into just petting things, whether it's a rabbit or a woman's head. But anyway, he gets a little rough with her.
Gets a little rough, and then she starts to freak out a little bit, and then he puts his hand over her mouth. Oh no, please don't scream, please don't whatever. And then she gets more panicked, and then he gets more panicked, and then she gets more panicked, and then he gets more panicked, and eventually he just shakes her and her neck breaks, and then she's dead. And like with everything else, he just tries to hide her body in the straw and then leaves. And then like basically runs away. But they have a plan. George and Lenny have a plan. If anything bad happens, just go to the river, go hide at the river, and I'll help you. And so when the body is found, something like 15 minutes later, Curly is going to, you know, I'm going to shoot that guy. I think he said something worse than that. But anyway, I'm going to shoot that guy. And they get guns. And then Lenny steals somebody else's pistol and then goes to find
George.
George steals the pistol. Finds the pistol. You know what? I keep getting them confused. Which one is which? In my mind, are just those two characters from The Simpsons. But that's, I think that's Lenny and Carl. But anyway, that's what I keep thinking in my brain. So George steals somebody's pistol and then runs out ahead of them. He pretends he's part of the posse looking for Lenny, but he goes and finds him and then he shoots him.
Well, yes, but before so George finds Lenny waiting dutifully at their rendezvous point.
Yeah.
You know, he finds out what happened, right? Mm-hmm. And Lenny is very sad about what it is. He feels bad. He knows he did something wrong, like a child. You know, he's kind of...
Yeah.
And George and him sit down on the bank and they kind of look out and he tells them one last time about the plan, about when they're going to have their farm and they're going to have rabbits, which means that there's always something for Lenny to pet. Mm-hmm. And then Lenny's kind of like, oh, that sounds really great. That's going to be awesome. And then George shoots him in the back of the head.
Right. A way to save him from being probably very brutally murdered by Curly. Curly's lynch mob. So he's saving him from that. But he's also killing. He's also killing Lenny.
Now, realistically, it's an unwinnable situation, right? Mm-hmm. You could hope for some sort of Rambo scenario where George and Lenny go beat the shit out of all those other guys. Now, if it was hand-to-hand, they probably would, but they're all armed, and they're fired up.
Right, so if this was a Michael Bay movie, it would definitely be, George and Lenny definitely just mow down everybody else and hightail it.
In front of a...
Hightail it out of town with the Transformers.
With a slow-motion American flag flapping in the breeze, and it's like smoke settling around them. It would be pretty badass.
Yeah.
But it's not what happens.
That's stupid.
Is George a good friend? I think... Well, he probably had no choice. Well, mm-hmm. He had a choice. There's always a choice. But he felt that that was the lesser of the two evils. He said, this guy's going to die one way or another, and it might as well be the least painful way I could manage. But he was only really looking out for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not... He's a schemer, George. He's clever. Why didn't he think of something like, all right, Lenny, I need you to like kind of hit me not so hard so it looks like I got beat up, and you're going to go this way and I'm going to say you went the other way and then we'll meet at this other place.
But could Lenny really handle that? Could Lenny really survive on his own, especially out in the woods? Could Lenny really escape this lynch mob? And the answer is probably not. Because, you know, he went earlier in the book when he talked about, I'm going to go find a cave and I'm going to eat ketchup. Literally, that's his story. That's his plan. You know, totally unrealistic. Perhaps George is you know, the giving him the ultimate kindness. No, that doesn't sound right. But
that's the nicest euphemism for euthanasia I've ever heard.
Like,
it's the ultimate kindness.
If I don't kill you now, someone else, it'll be just so much worse. Is that saving you for something? Yeah, I guess. But there's no way Lenny would survive in the long run, we think. Or it certainly looks like.
Certainly the way it is in the book. Which is fucked up. And it's probably true. But man, that is bleak. That is a terrible ending. What happens to George afterwards? I guess he kind of goes back to these guys. And, oh, I got him, fellas.
Yeah.
I got the guy. One of the farmhands understands what happened. I forget which farmhand. And he kind of consoles George.
Mm-hmm.
So George is physically upset by what he's done, and he's gonna probably feel really shitty about it, but it's fucked up for Lenny, who is the only really sympathetic character in the whole story. Everyone else is fucked up in some way. Curly's wife is, well, we'll talk about her a little bit more, but George is manipulative and mean, and all the other farmhands are just kind of one-dimensional characters. There's not much to them. Lenny is the one we're supposed to feel bad for.
Yeah.
And his best friend and his only friend in the world shoots him in the back of the head to save him.
To save him, right?
I mean, I understand that they're probably, that is the lesser of two evils, but the lesser of two evils is still evil. It's still shitty. Doesn't make me feel like George is a good guy. I don't know. I don't have a good feeling. I just have a gut feeling like that's fucked up. That doesn't feel right. What also doesn't feel right is not having any beer in my cup. Let's try another beer, and we'll keep thinking about George. Nate, you brought this one.
Yeah, all right. So this is from the Two Brothers Brewery, and now Lenny and George aren't brothers, but it's close. Right. They're kind of like brothers. So anyway, this is called Dog Days,
which also works
because Lenny is obsessed with that dog
for about 7 minutes
and kills it by accident.
Oh my god, man, making it rain over here. Second time now that Nate has Steve Austin to beer.
At least I didn't get on my computer this time. I did get on your rug though. Sorry about that.
I'll make sure my wife doesn't listen to this episode.
We'll cut that.
So this is a Dortmunder, which is a style you don't see all too often. We were talking before, like, oh, this beer could be an IPA. Because every brewery makes five IPAs. You know, some breweries make their name off of it. You know, I think of like Dogfish Head has, God, I mean, they have 60, 61, 75, 90, 120 minute IPA, plus a bunch of other ones that are like Flesh and Blood is a type of IPA, I think. And then they have like 10 different IPAs that they make on a pretty regular basis. Whereas Dortmunder, don't really see that too often. So I had to actually look it up because I couldn't tell you at the top of my head what it is. But it's basically, the name says German. So it's a German-style beer from, I guess, Dortmund, wherever that is. It's pretty much like a Pilsner from what I was reading. It should be kind of clean and biscuity, but overall a dry beer with sort of mild hop aroma. It certainly has like a biscuity smell, straw, very clean. It's an okay beer for what it is. This is really good beer if I was mowing the lawn, sitting outside, sweating my balls off. This would be great because it's like I wouldn't want to drink the last beer. I wouldn't want to drink the heavy, hoppy, thick beer. This is 5% alcohol, 27 IBUs. It tastes, I don't want to insult Two Brothers, and I'm not trying to insult them, but it tastes like the best possible version of Budweiser I could imagine.
What I just noticed is that right at the really small print, right at the top of the can, it says, a loyal friend. It's printed on the can. I didn't even notice that.
This is the trifecta here. Yeah.
It's the perfect beer for this podcast, right. I guess.
Is George a loyal friend? Fucking no. Lenny was the loyal friend. But they're flawed characters. And the story is ultimately a tragedy. George was more friend than enemy. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for is George a good friend.
It's a really complex situation. Yeah, which is what makes it so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that might be why people read this book still. Aside from it, it's short and accessible. That always helps a book stay popular.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's a less complicated question. Curly's wife, that character.
As a character, she's almost like the villain. Well, okay. As a character, she's just a terrible human being. She just got married to Curly, just like 2 weeks. But all she does is she just flirts with all the other guys, making Curly like insane. But also just stirring up trouble amongst everybody. At one point in the book, when Lenny is talking with their one black person on the farm,
Crooks.
Curly's wife says, oh, I can have you strung up anytime I want. You know, just you don't talk back to me because no one will believe you. They'll lynch you so fast, blah, 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 blah. And like, wow, she's really just a terrible person.
Yeah, she's shitty. And she's the only woman in this all male, not just cast, but the scenario where they live. There are only men there. So she gets all this attention. And when it's revealed that she wanted to be an actress, I think that's telling. I mean, that gets a little more dimension to her character because she wanted the attention, right? She wanted to be a celebrity. And here she is, a celebrity of sorts. She's the only woman on the farm. Nobody could touch her, but, quite a few of them are looking at her, I'm sure. and thinking about her in different ways, and she likes to hold that over them and be the tart of the farm. Tart could mean kind of girlfriend, but it really means prostitute.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting choice of words. Now, who's calling her the tart? I mean, it's not Curly, right? Curly's saying, well, here's my wife, the tart. But the other guys, I think, explaining why they don't like her, or giving her a name because of the way she acts and because they don't like her. Similar to, you know, if you were to call someone, I don't know, bitch or something like that, or hoe. An insulting term, not that she's actually occupied in the world's oldest profession. But she sucks. Is that fair? Is that fair, the one female character? What's, like, she sucks. She's an awful character. I mean, she's kind of there as, almost as a talking prop. That's her role in the story, is to make you not like her. And so
just to cause all this conflict.
Yep. And then for her to be killed by Lenny. She's the female equivalent of Chekhov's gun.
Right, yeah.
She has to be fired by the second act. And she sure is. Is it fair to, like, female character? Like, go back to people. Are people offended? Should people be offended by the way the mentally retarded character is depicted? Well, should the combine courtesan be an offensive thing for readers too? Should women read this book and say, wow, there's one woman in the book and she is comically vile in a way that, you know, only a woman could be this kind of bad?
My feeling is still, well, people should still read this, or this is definitely worthy of being read.
Sure.
For sure. But if someone wanted to complain about that, I couldn't really argue.
Right. But I think that just like with the Lenny thing, if you're complaining about that, you're missing the point of the book, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're not seeing the forest for the trees. And sure, she is this awful Jezebel, and nobody should like her. And you kind of halfway cheer when she dies because of the way she treated Crooks and the way she treats Lenny and George.
When reading older literature, you need to suspend your political correctness a little bit, just so you can get through it.
If you have any.
If you have any, which we should, Michael.
I don't, yeah. But yeah, we do, when you read older things, well, you know what, just the way things were written, characters tended to be simpler back in older literature. And it's not just about books that were shorter. I mean, this is a short book, but longer books still have very simple characters. You know, you read, I don't know if Dickens is the best example, because his characters tend to be somewhat complex, but not always. Or Wilkie Collins, the Moonstone, is a really famous sort of mystery novel. The female characters are so simple, so one-dimensional, that they're just, you know, the maid who is devoted to the male character that she can never have just because he's so handsome and she wants to be with him. And that's a character, and you're supposed to believe that. And I think people like, you know, maybe this is the simplified crap then made for a more interesting story. People weren't interested in psychological dramas. So it's a complication when you read it today because we're used to thinking about things differently. But as we've said many times now, it's still worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is, why read this? We say that it is worth reading. I think we're prepared to say why in some respect. But most people read this book in school.
In school, yeah.
And because of its length, it's often a high school or even middle school book, right? I looked on Wikipedia, it says 187 pages. That must be in like size 18 font.
Yes. Because
it is short. It is a brisk read.
So really the question we're asking is, should kids read this book? Should students read this book? I mean, I think partly because it's short and there's a lot going on and there's a really interesting sort of moral question, such as, is George a good friend? See, I'm confusing them again. Is George a good friend? There's a really, really good discussion. And then if you really, in an English class, wanted to get into the foreshadowing and the way this thing happened, the way that thing happened, there's a lot of really good stuff to discuss that I think totally makes it worth reading with kids, with students. High school level.
I think one of the things you said there makes it especially good for high school or middle school students, that they can get, there's lots of, you know, conflict and foreshadowing and literary devices that they could see demonstrated in a way that's not hard for them to find. I also think what's valuable about this book for younger readers is the stuff that we've talked about this whole episode. Their lack of nuance makes it better for younger readers because they don't want to or are not able to work that hard and don't want to settle on complex issues where there's no clear yes or no. So maybe by having Lenny be so genuinely kind and Curly's wife and Curly so unlikable, that makes the book easier for them to grasp.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't have to, you know, if there was a long, if this was a 600-page book and all the backstory things that are only hinted at were further explored, and then you become more sympathetic to Curly's wife because of her thwarted Hollywood dreams, and there's a whole chapter of when she had to bang a guy on a casting couch and she never got cast as the as the Randy Flapper. That might, you might feel bad for her, and then you're like, wow, she's the tragic character now.
Yeah.
Whereas that's not the point. Having it very simplified makes kids able to grasp it, and kids get emotional about things that they care about to way more so than the average adult. Not more than the average political pundit, but close to it. That they get so into it that they will shout you down and argue about it because they think it's just and they think it's right. And they have this nascent sense of justice in their mind that this might help form.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's valuable for kids to read it, not that you shouldn't read it if you're an adult and you have, because I only read it when I was in my, you know, I was like 27 or something when I first read this book.
You know, and also, if you didn't feel something at the end of this book, then you're dead inside. You know, it really, it's not very long, and it definitely makes you, like, react, you know, because that's the point. It's good entertainment. I mean, it's also really sad. So if you don't want to read something really sad, then don't read this book. But it makes you feel something, and that's what good literature should do.
Right, it makes you think about stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it makes you think of what about friendship, about, I mean, not even the more advanced literary things like the depiction of women or the depiction of the retarded or whatever, or depiction of race or of class. Like, that's great for college readers, but it just makes you think about friendship. It makes you think about loyalty. And those are like the most important things to high school and middle school students.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't feel something at the end of it, you know, maybe this could be a really good litmus test for young sociopaths. And you have
right.
kids take the read the book. And how did you feel about Lenny at the end? Like, I felt nothing. All right, great. Well, we have a padded room for you.
And if they really loved Catcher in the Rye, then, you know, let's lock them up.
Ugh. I think I'd rather have a kid read this than read Catcher in the Rye.
Kind of, yeah.
Just, I mean, the characters are, on a whole, probably just as unlikable as Holden Caulfield is. But there's more redeeming things about Lenny and friendship in the book, too. And they actually have a reason to be shitty. They're poor farmhands in the Depression. They're not spoiled rich kids. Go see episode 1 of the Drunk Guys Book Club to hear our full explanation of why Catching the Rye sucks.
It's also why this book was banned probably in the 50s and 60s. And Catcher in the Rye was not.
But Catcher in the Rye was challenged.
Mm. Not because it promoted socialism.
That's true, right. I haven't. I don't know too much about John Steinbeck's politics, but I bet he was not against it.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody who was poor during the Depression probably would be, or at
yeah.
least have a sympathetic ear for socialism. But yeah, so this it's anti-business.
Anti-business.
Right, the farm owners are pricks. I think Grapes of Wrath is far more explicitly anti-business than this.
Definitely.
Maybe that's just a product of Grapes of Wrath being 6 times as long as this book, and having a different goal, which very well may have been about class in America.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about... So what is this about, then? It's not about class. That's bullshit. This is not about anti-business. It's not about white or black, even though it's a little thing in the book. It's not about men or women. Is it friendship? Is it loyalty? Is that what it is? That's what I seem to settle on.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So if you haven't read it in middle school or high school, which is right, I mean, we actually, neither of us did, right? When did you
no.
first read this?
About a year ago.
Yeah. Now, was this a book that you were supposed to read in high school and you didn't? Because I have quite a few books of those I had on a syllabus in high school that I never actually read.
I spark noted
my way through it.
I don't think so. I read The Pearl in Ninth Grade, which is a different short story by Steinbeck. And then I read Grapes of Wrath in 10th grade or 11th grade. So that was like, that fulfilled the Steinbeck quota for my high school experience.
I find if you call it novella, you feel less guilty claiming it as a distinct book on Goodreads.
Right, yeah.
Short story feels shitty, but novella, that's...
It's almost a novel.
It's almost a novel. It's the thing with the hot Spanish-speaking ladies on TV. Those are much more entertaining. Actually, much more entertaining than The Pearl, probably, because I didn't really dig The Pearl so much. I think a kid will read this and will find it, as you said, you'll feel something. And isn't that probably all you really want? If you're trying to encourage people to read more books, you want them to read something that when they close it, well, first you want them to read something that they can get through. Yeah. But when they close the cover, they're like, wow, I feel some type of way that I've read that book. I feel something. I'm thinking about it even though I'm no longer reading the book. This affected me somehow. Isn't that, mm-hmm. What else could you really hope for? It's not just about vocabulary words.
No.
It's not just about being able to talk at a cocktail party about books you've read, which never happens, ever. But
no.
That's why people read their books. You feel something. So that I think everyone should read this book in middle school or high school. Certainly a lot better than the other shit I had to read. Fucking Sound of Waves. Ugh.
I did not read that. The one that I hated was Ivanhoe by Walter Scott. Maybe now that I'm an educated adult, I could reread that book and find some redeeming quality. No, but I still think that's the worst book ever written.
Ivantart? I've not read Ivanhoe.
Ivanthought?
Ivan Coquette? Harlot?
Ivan Strumpet?
Strumpet, yeah, there you go. So join us next time when we read Junot Diaz's The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde.
All right, excellent.
See you then.
Let us know what you thought. Send us an email, drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com, or...
Or follow us on Twitter @drunkguysbc, as in book club, and we hope to see you there. See you next week.
Bye.